The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor, brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
Hello and welcome. This week we are in the unusual area of storage and warehousing, and I'm joined by Simon Bohr, Group Marketing Director at SEC. Simon, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here. Could we just start by, could you explain a little bit more about storage and warehousing? Because I'm guessing this is a new industry to many people.
Right. Well, thank you very much for having me, Kiran, and good morning to you too. Yes, so storage and warehousing as an industry, inherently connected to and part of the logistics process in the UK. It's that mechanism by which the goods you order arrive where they're supposed to be, whether that be at your home or within a store that you might go to shop at. Those goods flow through a warehouse or distribution centre, are collated, segregated into orders, and subsequently then shipped on to their final destination. And that process requires knowledge of what products are stored, what size they are, where they are, how they're picked, how they're selected, how they're bundled together, and then distributed forwards.
And I think it's probably fair to say that for many of us, we don't really think about the sort of logistics side of getting products, but it's obviously a very key part of channel marketing. So where does SEC fit into this warehousing industry?
It's an interesting point that you make, in that logistics and warehousing generally is invisible to most people. However, until recently with Brexit, the supply chain issues we've all experienced through the pandemic with COVID, and then subsequent material shortages caused by global disruption, logistics and warehousing has come more to the fore because it's the area that dampens the effect, where possible, of those shortages. SEC fit into that marketplace in quite a unique way, in that we provide consultancy, design, and install solutions for businesses that operate warehouses and distribution centres. So that's businesses that need to, as I mentioned before, collate, aggregate, select, pick, pack, and dispatch products and goods to their final destination.
Can you paint me a picture of what a warehouse looks like, a modern warehouse? Because probably most of us just have an image of a large building just filled with boxes, but you're talking about selecting, packing. You must need to be able to track what goes in and what goes out. So how does a modern warehouse look like? How does it work?
Warehouses can be a variety of sizes. So they can be quite small, and they can range up to multiple football pitch sized buildings that you see for brand names like Amazon and John Lewis and TK Maxx in the retail sector, just as examples. How they operate is that they are generally filled with a range of storage mechanisms that can be from simple racking systems through to automated storage systems that don't have people operating them. And those can be a mix and match or a hybrid design that can combine any of those types of technologies. And they also have subsequent operational areas. So they will have people that put things into boxes and packages. They will have people that palletize goods. Those processes can also be automated. So there can be a range of different activities that go on within the modern warehouse, including assembly, sub-assembly work, testing, clean room environments for specific electronic components to be packed and dispatched, a wide range of different applications.
Well, that's interesting. I've never thought of clean rooms as being part of a warehouse.
Warehouses are becoming more and more integrated spaces. When you look at those large buildings now, there will be the storage area, there will be a packing and picking area, there'll be areas for what are called contract services, especially in some of the larger 3PL or distribution centre style premises. And there'll also be offices and other functions that go alongside all of those activities that go on in a warehouse that need to be accommodated. The modern warehouse also, of course, is a huge user of energy traditionally. And there are many, many sustainability issues now that are coming into play where designers and developers of the modern warehouse are actually taking into account the technologies that can reduce the environmental load of the design and the performance in operation of those buildings.
So you used a phrase there, 3PL. What's that?
Yes, apologies. It's sometimes hard to keep jargon out of a conversation, but 3PL is a business called a third-party logistics provider, 3PL, third-party logistics. And essentially, you may not want to operate your own warehouse, and a 3PL provider will provide that service for you. And they can provide a range of add-on services besides the actual storage of pallets and goods.
I see. I have to say, going through the website this morning, the SEC website this morning, there's a wonderful host of jargon. I'm not going to pick you up on all of it, but what's a turnkey project? That sounded wonderful.
Well, that's one of the areas where SEC truly excel. For us, a turnkey project is one where the client has one point of contact that coordinates, marshals, and project manages all the other elements of a development. So, for instance, we might be working with a customer that requires pallet racking, that requires some form of automation in terms of pick and pack and put away of goods received and goods dispatched. They may also need some office space developing or canteens or welfare areas for staff. And as I mentioned, we talked about clean room environments where specialist activities may be undertaken. Now, all of those would normally be provided by an individual business. Where SEC come into play is that we have our own capabilities in most of those areas, and where we need to subcontract, we project manage the final delivery of that scheme for the client. And that's what we mean by a turnkey solution. One of the benefits of it is that it's easier for the client to actually achieve what they require out of the design. There's very little slippage in the specification between the various elements, and you tend to end up with a well-integrated, well-designed, and hopefully well-installed solution.
Okay, and you also said the word pallet packing. Now, I'm assuming that's just sticking pallets on shelves, or is there something more esoteric about it?
It can be quite a number of things, actually. At the very basic level, goods can arrive on a pallet boxed, and I think we've generally seen those on television, on the news, when articles have related to warehousing or business developments. And those are unloaded from a lorry by forklift truck. They're taken into a warehouse area. They're usually stored on pallet racking, which is designed to accommodate various pallet sizes. And then when the goods from those pallets are needed, they're often broken down from that pallet, if they're not dispatched as a full pallet, that is, and then consolidated with other goods that are then mixed together to provide an order that can then be repalletized and then sent out as a full mixed pallet to the end user, which would often be a branch for a wholesaler, or it could be a store and such like. Sometimes those pallets are broken down and actually individual orders are sent, and that's where the e-commerce market has grown considerably through the pandemic period, and a lot of individual orders now are sent out, and the growth in that market has been quite considerable. And those products are repacked from that pallet into an individual order or box, as we all see with regards to some of the Amazon type deliveries that we have in the UK now.
Oh, that's interesting, because I was going to ask you how the industry had changed with the pandemic. And I think we're all aware of, was it the Ever Given that got stuck in the Suez Canal and caused all sorts of other problems? And as you say, there's all sorts of supply chain problems going on. So how has the industry...
The warehousing industry, the logistics industry in the UK, has seen huge impacts from recent geopolitical economic changes globally. You mentioned the disruption to supply chains. We talk about Brexit now a lot still. These are areas that have impacted significantly on logistics from a wide variety of perspectives. Firstly, labour. Labour shortages in the UK, both for lorry drivers and warehouse staff, as well as in many other sectors, is at a premium. It's very hard to get the right labour in the right place. And that's driving a huge pace of change in technology, adoption of technology by warehouse operators, looking at robotics, looking at automated robotic vehicles to be able to carry goods from the point of storage to the point of pack so that people don't have to do it. Energy costs have increased substantially, so solar energy is now becoming a big issue for warehouse developers, and incorporating solar panels and renewable energy sources into warehouse build and warehouse design is now a key part. The volume of goods stored in the UK is increasing because of the need to flatten out those troughs caused by disruption in the supply chain. So when a ship gets stuck in a canal, there's more stock on the ground to be able to satisfy customers' needs whilst the supply chain catches up. A huge amount of change, rapid pace change, all geared around the need to satisfy the end user and the customer's requirements. And that's a significant operational and marketing challenge for most businesses.
Yes, we've gone from sort of saying, oh, just-in-time delivery is what everybody wants, to realising that supply chains are under pressure.
Supply chains have been hugely under pressure, and the industry is reacting accordingly. A number of associations within the industry, the Chartered Institute of Logistics and Transport, the UK Warehousing Association, are all looking at how to support businesses in reacting to that challenge. And companies like SEC, with a very market-focused, customer-focused approach, are now looking more to the needs of the individual customer rather than the requirements of the warehouse per se to store a specific amount. It's how that amount is stored. It's how that amount is managed. It's what that volume means in terms of customer satisfaction to the client.
This is amazing, because it's so much part of an industry one doesn't tend to think about. So who are your stakeholders when you're sitting as group marketing director? Who are the stakeholders that you have to think about?
Essentially, they're business owners, whether those businesses are, as I mentioned before, part of the supply chain, i.e. Warehouse operators or distribution centre owners. They are brand owners, certainly through the fashion industry, but also into manufacturing. They can be, for instance, large IT solution providers that need to actually provide kit out into their particular market customers. And within those organisations, the traditional stakeholder used to be the operations manager or the warehouse manager or the equivalent director. Mm-hmm. We're finding now that we're marketing more and more to the CEO, the finance director, that whole decision-making unit at that C-suite level, that require information to be able to make real decisions mm-hmm. about investment profiles, how they actually invest in warehouse space. Are they full? Do they need to move? Can they reconfigure and make space available in their existing premises? If they have to buy new warehouses or rent new warehouses, which incidentally another impact of the changes we've had is that we're at an all-time low in terms of warehouse vacancies. There is very little available stock in the UK at this particular moment. So new build is on the rise. It's actually, I think, defying a lot of the usual economic indicators we see at the moment, in that it's a growth area. And we can help advise those stakeholders on the best strategy forwards for their storage requirements. And we use data their own data, in fact, to help advise that investment strategy.
Really interesting, the idea that the decision-making unit has changed, and you've also indicated that you're sending out sort of warehousing is moving to sort of smaller units, smaller amounts being posted out. So how are the customers changing in this marketplace?
So customers in the market are changing quite dramatically and have been doing so for a number of years, and I think the last 18 months has accelerated that pace of change. Customers, whether they be corporate or private individuals, now want goods and services delivered quickly. Most of the activity that they undertake to select those goods and services is now digital. And a lot of provision is dealt with through e-commerce, especially on the business-to-consumer side. However, in the B2B market, we're also finding that Customers that would normally dispatch bulk quantities to an individual destination are now dispatching bulk quantities but split to individual destinations. So working from home, for instance, if a company takes on 10 new people, they used to have 10 laptops or computers sent to one location. Now those 10 are sent to individual mm-hmm. addresses. And they need to be received quickly. That also means that the IT teams that would have configured those in the office, that configuration needs to take place at the point of dispatch. So customers have changed. The sorts of services that warehousing and distribution centres provide has also changed. Customers' expectations have become far more demanding. They change more rapidly. It's not just a seasonality issue now. We're finding that many of our customers are talking to us about simply demand changes that relate to an individual's requirement for a specific event or activity rather than a seasonal change in stock profiling. And that's where the data that comes in that drives the design that SEC provide for customers is important.
Gosh, I had no idea because there'd been so much change within an industry. I think all industries are realising that we've been hit by change with the pandemic, but you really are at the sort of sharp end of it. So one of the new things, I mean, again, looking at the SEC website, one of the things you've obviously recently started doing is vertical farming. And so you're sort of moving into something that is adjacent to what you currently do?
Absolutely. Vertical farming is a really interesting development for SEC. One of SEC's key areas of expertise is in automation. We take data from customers around their SKU profiles, their stock keeping units. That's the products that they actually hold and sell. And that's dimensional data, frequency of sale data, demand data, forecasting data, and so on and so forth. And we use that to drive through AI and machine learning bots that we've developed the configuration of the pick and pack elements of the warehouse. We've been aware that we've used that data and our programming capabilities and our digital design capabilities to orchestrate the changes within the warehouse. One of the things we found in vertical farming is that as an embryonic segment of the agriculture market, a variety of different people have invested in and tried to manage vertical farms forwards. And this is where that turnkey provision from SEC provides some significant benefit for the end user. And it's identified for us an adjacent market for our particular capabilities. So we now provide, along with a number of partners that deal with the irrigation, the lighting, the heating and ventilation, we now provide automated storage systems in a way, but geared towards the trays that are required to hold and grow crops. So rather than pallets, it's crops. And our digital and programming capabilities are used to orchestrate the movement and flow of those crops through a vertical farm. So vertical farming for us panders to some of our core strengths, but is also an adjacent market that is at a very early stage of growth and presents some great opportunities for the UK and obviously for SEC.
Vertical farming is literally farming vertically. So we're growing crops up and down. I find it really interesting that somehow you went from going, we do storage, warehousing and expertise and data driven to vertical farms. That's a very interesting jump.
Going into vertical farming is a very interesting move for SEC, and it does seem on the face of it quite a large jump. But when you consider the technology that's involved, the types of equipment that's involved, you can see there are some significant similarities. And the way we leverage the technical capabilities of those pieces of equipment using data and software programs to orchestrate the movement and profiling of the crops within that structure, you can see that actually it's very similar to the movement and flow of pallets and goods through a warehouse. This is the movement and flow of crops through essentially a farm factory. The benefit being, of course, you may grow a certain amount of crops on a flat level field outside, but indoors you can have 15 tiers of that same flat level field, one on top of the other. And in fact, for every meter squared in a vertical farm, you get 15 times the yield you would get from traditional farming. And there are other benefits alongside that as well.
And so what you've done is taken your ability to do the logistics and obviously control clean room environments and everything else, and you can use that to presumably temperature control, ambient control and everything else that's needed in these vertical farms.
Quite correct, yes. So a vertical farm is in a way a controlled environment, and a controlled environment uses the same sort of technology that you would see in a clean room for pharmaceutical manufacturing, for instance. Within that controlled environment, obviously one can control light, temperature, water, nutrients within the water, recycling of the water. You can use sustainable energy to drive all of the power requirements for those particular services. A vertical farm uses 95% less water than traditional farming. The majority of the water is recycled. That which is lost is generally consumed by the plant or the crop. It can be powered almost 100%, depending on the location, by renewable energy sources. The key is in orchestrating all of that together into one management process.
So I'm still absolutely fascinated by this sort of, I mean, it's a classic pivot, isn't it? It's taking your current expertise and applying it into a new environment. It's almost a sort of textbook example of doing that. But it's really fascinating to hear somebody talking about it. So, Simon, before I let you go, could we talk a little bit about marketing careers within the storage and warehousing industry and the sort of qualities that people look for in marketers? You've suggested it's very data driven, so I'm assuming analytics is going to be quite a key skill.
There are a range of marketing careers within the storage and warehouse industry, and there are many aspects to those marketing careers. Yes, analysis is a key part. Being able to identify the synergies and efficiencies you can drive out of a process using the data that that process delivers, combining data sets almost in the context of big data, especially if you've got multi-site operations, but even down to a single warehouse, being able to analyse data to show the most efficient route forwards is key. Secondly, we talked about customers being more demanding. So from a marketing perspective, being able to identify within the marketplace new trends and developments that customers are looking for, but using research techniques to actually identify ones that are relevant to the organisation and fit with the context of the operation is essential. Vertical farming is a great example of that. That's a sector with huge compound annual growth rates through to 2030 compared to some of the other sectors that the traditional warehousing market affords. So for instance, 25 to 26% over the course of between now and 2030 is not uncommonly reported as a CAGR for vertical farming. It's an area where we import probably 46% of our food into the UK. There are huge areas of the world that are suffering food stress. So when you look at that data, it clearly presents an opportunity. It's how one leverages that opportunity with the capabilities one has within the organisation that makes the difference. And that's where marketing analytics and marketing research come into play. Once you've got that, you then need to be able to market out to the customer. So there's very creative roles within marketing. Email and digital marketing are areas that are in high demand. Especially in our particular area in Stevenage, recruiting the right caliber people, in fact, to those sorts of roles can sometimes prove difficult. People don't regard warehousing and logistics as being quite as technically driven as it is. And that's something that's changed dramatically over the last 4 years. And the profile of the industry is crying out for new blood, really, for diversity, for younger people to come into the industry to drive change. So there's plenty of opportunities in marketing for people in the warehouse and logistics industry. indeed, programming, virtual reality is becoming part of the design process now, certainly at SEC, where we're able to use digital techniques to demonstrate to people what their final end installation will look like prior to even striking a blow on site. So marketing's taking a significant role within the warehouse and logistics industry, most certainly.
Simon Bohr, Group Marketing Director at SEC, thank you very much. That was absolutely fascinating. I've certainly learned a huge amount. Thank you very much indeed.
Well, thank you, Kieran. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.